the staggering account of the Sermon on the Mount, which I don't pretend to understand at all. It's coming from the silence on the dock of the bay, from the brave, the bold, the battered heart of Chevrolet. Democracy has come to the USA.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now from Caracas, Venezuela, is Antonio Gonzalez, who is president of the Southwest Voter Registration Education Project, the largest and oldest nonpartisan Latino voting participation organization in the United States, founded in 1974. Antonio Gonzalez is, and the Southwest Voter Registration Education Project, have been central figures in the dramatic growth of Latino political participation across the country. And during the first dozen years of Gonzalez's tenure at the Southwest Voter Registration Education Project, they've helped double Latino registration from 5.4 million in 1994 to more than 10 million registrants in 2006. He currently appears as a regular commentator on Public Radio International's Tavis Miley Show and hosts his own weekly radio show at KPFK in Los Angeles, Strategy Session. In 2005, Time magazine named Antonio Gonzalez one of the 25 most influential Hispanics in America. Welcome to Background Briefing. Antonio, we just apparently lost the call, so I'm waiting here for to be reconnected, and hopefully that will happen in a moment. Antonio, are you with us?
I'm here.
Well, it's great to talk to you, Antonio. We're talking then with Jennifer McCoy, who gave us a kind of nuts and bolts overview of the mechanics of the elections, that it's on these touchscreen machines, very advanced. Both sides agree that they work. There's none of the fear that we have here in the United States about electronic voting. By and large, it hasn't been angry and polarized. It's been quite calm and civil, which is, of course, is not what we've been hearing about politics there. And the candidates have been slinging some mud at each other. One, Maduro calling Capriles a rich kid, and Capriles referring to him as a kid as well. So give us a sense of on-the-ground politics. What's your read on what's happening today?
Well, first, I just want to reiterate in Jennifer's point. The Venezuelan electoral system is infinitely superior to the American system in terms of the quality and equality of machines, the training of electoral officials. It's really very, very impressive. I think Jennifer was probably being a little kind, because it is a Or comparing tendentious elections to tendentious elections, because compared to America's elections, the Venezuelan elections are indeed very polarized. Lots of harsh rhetoric, a lot of scuffling. I was in a meeting with representatives of the Capriles campaign, which is the opposition campaign, the right opposition, and they were making accusations, including that armed men were preventing voting, or would prevent voting. This is before the election, in the outlying regions, probably more towards the Colombian border, and that there was a lot of intimidation of Capriles supporters in Chavista strongholds and that kind of thing. And I don't doubt there's a pretty strong tendentious campaign atmosphere. They're polarized. These are two very different projects. The, Capriles campaign, Enrique Capriles Kowalski, is a neoliberal sort of restoration campaign, and the Maduro campaign is a continuation of Chavismo, which is slowly but surely marching towards socialism. So they're very opposed. A lot of campaign tactics in and out. At one point, Capriles Kowalski was running a Me Too tactic, saying he would sustain a lot of the Chavista social programs, But that didn't last, and it became more polarized towards the end of the campaign. Election Day is by and large, however, by and large, at this point, based on the reports and talking to the other observer groups and a company or groups, pretty normal. Participation was slightly down from the record turnout in October of 2012, where you had more than 80% of the eligible voting. That compares to about 50% of the eligible in the United States. So turnout is a little bit down, but not much. And the conventional wisdom here, Ian, is that high turnout benefits Nicolás Maduro, the candidate of the Socialist United Party of Venezuela, and lower turnout benefits the conservative opposition. And at this point, we're sort of in a place where it looks like turnout is not fantastic, but also not bad. There are some early exit polls that have Nicolás Maduro in the lead by about 10 points. But that was as of 10 o'clock this morning, and the latest, remember, these things are not public. These are all like who you know within which campaign and stuff. The latest is that lead is narrowing. And remember, it's a Sunday, and the big surge of turnout is expected in the afternoon. So there's a long night before us.
Again, I'm speaking with Antonio Gonzalez, president of the Southwest Voter Registration Education Project, the largest and oldest nonpartisan Latino voting participation organization in the United States, where he has helped double Latino registration from 5.4 million in 1994 to more than 10 million registrants today. And he also hosts his own weekly radio show here at KPFK in Los Angeles, Strategy Session, and he's in Caracas, Venezuela, observing the election. And in terms of Capriles, he has tried to suggest that he's a sort of like Lula in Brazil, a social democrat. And on the other side, I don't know whether that's working in any respect, but on the other side, you've got Maduro continuing the legacy of Chavez. When you talk about polarization, I want to get a sense here in terms of comparing to our politics. When you have candidates like Maduro referring, saying that the Americans poisoned Chavez, referring to the other side as Nazis and lackeys of the American Empire, how is that similar to, in terms of tone and attitude, to the kind of totalitarian politics that parts of our Republican Party here in the United States? I mean, Karl Rove just doesn't want to beat the Democrats. He wants to grind them into the dust. And Ted Cruz and Michelle Bachmann refer to Democrats routinely as being un-American and essentially traitors. So is there an odd comparison between the Venezuelan left and the American right?
You get hot, you know, very hot language and insulting going on in Venezuela on both sides of the equation. Now, remember, Capriles was the candidate against Chavez in October of 2012. And then Chavez dies, and so he's sort of tiptoeing around the sainted memory of the father or, you know, godfather of the country, given that we're still in that mourning period. So he had softened his rhetoric for a while and had said, he tried to claim the, I'm a more of a social democratic candidate, and said that he would keep some of the Bolivarian social missions, which are essentially social empowerment programs. But that rhetoric really changed and heated up once he realized the last 3 months of the campaign, 3 weeks of the campaign, that Nicolás Maduro is not running a particularly good campaign. Maduro's not been a candidate. He stumbled around for a while, said some sort of wild things, implying that he was visited by the spirit of Chavez in the form of a little bird, it's a big joke here in Venezuela. And he just, he's not a policy candidate. I was watching him on national news yesterday or Friday on late night news, and he was exhorting the voters to massively turn out tomorrow, until somebody flashed him a note that the election was on Sunday.
Oh,
and he had to, like, you know, sort of, you know, stumble over himself and had to go and say, no, I meant Sunday. And he's not a skilled candidate. And that's been apparent for some time. So the Capriles has bared his fangs over the last several weeks, and the polarization has deepened. You know, there's, I mean, this is a mobilized country. There was marches of hundreds of thousands of people on Thursday and Wednesday to close both campaigns. You drive across Caracas, and when you're on the center and the west of town, the image of Chavez and Maduro is everywhere. Billboards, electric signs, banners hung on buildings, graffiti everywhere, T-shirts. It's mobilized and it's organized. That's true. But then you cross over this indivisible median line in the center of town and go to the east of town, which is more of the middle class and affluent. There is a Beverly, an equivalent of the Beverly Hills of Venezuela in a town called Chacao, which is the stronghold of the opposition. And the exact opposite is true for Capriles. T-shirts and everyone's talking about it and billboards and banners hung from skyscrapers and so on. So both sides are mobilized. The opposition realizes this is their best chance to win power. And history is against the left here in the sense that there's never been a high turnout election without Chavez on the ballot in the Chavista Bolivarian era. The elections alternate from very high turnout when he's running to, you know, pretty ho-hum turnout for a congressional or gubernatorial or constitutional reform elections. And, you know, people say socialism is against democracy. You hear that a lot in the United States. Well, Venezuela's combined votes. They have a national election every year, on something. There's an election. But this is the first time you've had... Chavez is not on the ballot. So we'll see. Indicators, preliminary indicators, are that the turnout will be good enough for the Chavista candidate Maduro to win election. But, you know, the day's young.
Well, we had a surprise, for example, when the war in Nicaragua ended, and there was an expectation that there would be the Sandinistas would win the election, and they didn't. The first post-war election, if you will, and that was a surprise. So
you are absolutely correct. I was there observing those elections with a congressional delegation in 1990, and I remember arriving in the country. It's February of 1990. The polls say Daniel Ortega 58, Violeta Chamorro of the UNO, the opposition candidate, supported with U.S. money, Ortega's the Sandinista candidate, 58-40. And we go to this closing march of the Sandinistas, and I kid you not, there were 500,000 people there. And the next day, there's the elections. A few days later, there's the elections. And Ortega didn't get 500,000 votes. And he lost 58-40 instead of winning 58-40. But that's a very different context. There was war, death, broken government that couldn't fund social programs. None of those are at play here in Venezuela. Nevertheless, one gets, you know, itchy thinking about those memories, and I remember them clearly. I don't think that'll happen here. I think it'll be close race, but the Chavistas continue to seem to have you know, mobilized and well-organized electorate. They have, certainly have the campaign and political infrastructure in place, even though at the time they don't have Hugo Chavez.
So when you described Maduro as being somewhat a clumsy candidate, that reminds me of an interview I did a while back when Capriles was first running. And he was described that way as being awkward. He tried sort of hugged people, but he was kind of a bumbling kind of candidate. So has Capriles gotten better?
I talked to a top campaign pollster here, who's been specifically associated with the left, and he told me that Capriles has run the better campaign. He has become more polished since his first run last October, and he has run a campaign based on issues, talking about the very real problems here in terms of public security, in terms of scarcity of certain foodstuffs, in terms of inflation, all things which would vex the middle class more, since the poor receives subsidies for subsidized food and stuff. But he's been run a clearer campaign, whereas Maduro has, he was in mourning, and then they were saying, we're going to continue Chavez, continue what's been going on. And depending on how you articulate that, does that mean continue the good or continue the bad?
Well, Jennifer McCoy was saying that she, by the way, in terms of monitoring this election, that there was a possibility of the monitoring continuing, but now the government changed the rules to international accompaniment as opposed to monitoring, where they can accompany. They can't object to anything until after the election results come out, which is apparently later this evening. I asked what the reasons were for this, and she said, well, one of the reasons was that there's no reciprocity of international observers in the United States, for example. So I guess, we're not in a position to lecture the Venezuelans about, one, you said their election system is much better than ours, but two, we don't allow observers, and I guess if we had observers in Florida in the last election, we'd be looking pretty bad.
The world might be different. I think that's right. For example, I'm here invited by the National Election Council of Venezuela, but I'm not an observer. I'm essentially an unofficial witness. We have access to polling places. We've been educated on the polling process. For me, this is my fourth Venezuelan election. It's a knowledgeable group of people. You certainly, and you can certainly say what you see, but you have no official role. And let me just tell you, there are multiple national observers and party poll watchers from all the parties in every polling place. Venezuela is a politically organized country, left, center, and right. And given the excellent system that it's been talked about throughout the world how good the Venezuelan electoral system is, the physical system, the training of the workers and so forth. I am confident, given the sort of poll watching that you see from interested parties, that you have at least election day is fine. Now, the campaign, this atmosphere and so on, I wasn't here. I'm certain there was a lot of things going on. There's tension in the country. But election day seems fine.
So if it's close, just in closing, Antonio Gonzalez, if it's close, would that therefore mean that the politics in the going forward would be less strident and less polarized if there was a recognition that the Chavistas and the Bolivarian Revolution isn't getting the kind of support it did before under Chavez?
The figure that I've heard is around 10 points. If Maduro wins by around 10 points, which would be Chavez since 1998, won no less than 11 points up to 26-point presidential victory. So they say the magic number is around 10 for the opposition to accept its defeat. There's a gray area from 5 to 10, and once you get below 5 points, and no one here says that Capriles is going to win except for Capriles campaigners, if you get a win of less than 5 points by Maduro, you can expect that the opposition will protest, would not accept its defeat, and there would be tensions and who knows what boiling over in the aftermath. It reminds me of the scenario in the 2007 election for socialism. Venezuela, Chavez put directly on the ballot, let's vote in socialism, change the constitution, here we go. And at the end of the day, Chavez lost. He wasn't on the ballot, but he campaigned very good for it, and he lost 50.1 to 49.9. The urban myth here is that he really won. And I've heard it again and again and again from people that I know are in the know, that he really won, but his victory was so narrow that the government conceded the election before finishing the vote count and finagled it with the National Electoral Council to avoid civil war.
Hmm. Well, we should follow up on more on that, because that's an interesting, and we've run out of time. But since we crossed paths here at KPFK, let's have another conversation, Antonio.
I'm happy to have it, Ian. Thanks for having me, and hello to all my fans and listeners, and you're doing a great job.
Thanks a lot, Antonio. Again, I've been speaking with Antonio Gonzalez, who's president of the Southwest Voter Registration Education Project, the largest and oldest nonpartisan Latino voter participation organization in the United States, founded in 1974. He has been a central figure in the dramatic growth of Latino political participation across the nation, and during his first dozen years at the Southwest Voter Registration Education Project, Antonio Gonzalez has helped double Latino registration from 5.5 million in 1994 to more than 10 million registrants in 2006. He currently appears as a regular commentator on Public Radio International's Tavis Smiley Show and hosts his own weekly radio show, KPFK, in Los Angeles Strategy Session. In 2005, Time Magazine named Antonio Gonzalez one of the 25 most influential Hispanics in America. And we talked to him from Caracas, Venezuela. We're going to take a brief station break. We'll be back talking about whether something is going to happen today, Monday, in North Korea on the 101st anniversary of the birth of the founder, Kim Il-sung.
Cabeza,